Now we're holding on Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, the top line. We started talking yesterday about a din in Hilchos Shvi'is. The discussion was, we know, of course, that produce, fruit, vegetables, grains, whatever, that grow during Shemitah have Kedushas Shvi'is as far as various applications. There's only, you can only use them for their designated purpose. For example, as we're going to discuss now, you can't use fruit for, let's say, for example, to make something that you're going to use for laundering or for dyeing or whatever. You have the concept of beer, you have the concept that you can't sell it, and then if you do, then the money has Kedushas Shvi'is as well, etc. We were discussing, what about wood? What about, for example, wood that a person might use for firing up an oven? So does Kedushas Shvi'is apply to that? So the Gemara had pointed out that no, because since the Pasuk describes the produce of Shemitah with the word la'ochla, to eat it, that means that what kind of things are subject to Shemitah? Only those things where Hana also be ore shoven, where the Hana and the destruction of it happen at the same time. So eating, you do that. You're chewing the food. In that way, you're destroying it, and at the same time, you're having Hana from it in the taste and afterwards in the nutrition from it. As opposed to wood, when you fire up an oven, first you burn the wood and it becomes charcoal, only then do you cook and bake on it. So therefore, Kedushas Shvi'is wouldn't apply to wood. And the Gemara had mentioned, what about Eitzim D'Mashchan, which according to Rashi meant oil, meant wood that's soaked with oil, for example, with oil or tar or whatever, that can be used as a natural torch, like pine wood or whatever. Where there you do have on also an Biur and Shavin, or according to Tosfos, Eitzim D'Mashchan means wood that you're using for a bonfire to warm yourself up by. And the Gemara said that's true, but Stam Eitzim La'asaka Hein Oimdin, in general, wood is meant to fire up an oven rather than to use for a torch or to warm yourself up by, and therefore we go according to the way it is with the majority of wood, and therefore Kedushas Shvi'is doesn't apply to that. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Kahana, the Eitzim Lahasaka Tanoihi. Actually, says Rav Kahana, this point about whether wood is that wood in general is meant for using in an oven and not for other purposes, and therefore the Kedushas Shvi'is doesn't apply to it, even if you have a particular batch of wood that you collected for a different purpose, for example, for torches according to Rashi, or bonfires according to Tosfos. This that we're saying, Eitzim La'asaka, that wood in general is meant for firing up an oven, Tanoihi, is actually subject to a Machlokas Tanoihi. Detanya, we learn in a Braisa. Ein moistrin peiros shvi'is lo l'mishra v'lo l'kvusa. You can't use peiros shvi'is for mishra, for example, to use wine of Shemitah, let's say, for mishra to soak flax in it. Part of the process of making flax is you have to soak the stems of them in some kind of liquid for a while to be able to extract the fibers. And one possibility is you could use wine for that purpose. So during Shemitah, you can't use that because wine is meant to be drunk, not to be used for that purpose. V'lo l'kvusa, and also not for laundering. The same idea where you'd soak the clothing in wine to be able to get out stains. Again, you can't do that. Both of those, Rashi describes, both fall under the category of schora. Where one thing that says la'ochla, that peiros shvi'is are meant to be eaten, which implies v'lo l'schora, they're not to be used for trade, for buying and selling. And Rashi explains that this matter of using peiros shvi'is for soaking flax or laundering or whatever would be considered schora. Now, what you do have is, by the way, in Mishnayos Shvi'is, it describes there are types of plants that, to begin with, are meant for that purpose. We're going to discuss now in the Gemara, what about if you made this to begin with for this purpose? But you definitely have food. There are certain kinds of plants that are meant to begin with to be used for laundering or things like that, and those you can use on Shvi'is for that purpose. But here we're talking about regular food that you want to repurpose for that. On the other hand, Rav Yossi, I mean, Nosdin, Peiros Shvi'is, L'Socha Mishra, L'Socha Kvusa. On the other hand, Rav Yossi says you could use Peiros Shvi'is. You could use, for example, wine of Shvi'is for soaking flax or washing clothing. So, So we're going to figure out, once we figure out the basis behind the machloikas of Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, then we'll understand why they're also going to argue on regarding wood as well. So my time is the Rabbanon. Why did the Rabbanon say that you can't? Because the pasuk says ochla, because the pasuk says that peiros shvius are meant to be eaten, which implies v'loyla mishra, not for soaking, and ochla means v'loyla kibusa, means and not for laundering. So therefore, so the pasuk is being mimicked with that word la'ochla, that it's not to be used for that purpose. But Rabbi Yossi, remember, what does Rabbi Yossi answer to that? He says, omakro lochem. Sure, but the pasuk says, earlier in the same pasuk, it says, v'hoisa shabbos ha'aretz lochem la'ochla, the produce of shmita should be lochem for you, for eating. And Rabbi Yossi says, lochem means v'chol tzorcheichem, means it's for all, it's available for all you need. And soaking flax and soaking clothes to pre-wash them are both needs of yours. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says you can do that. So the question is, well, according to the Chachamim, the fact is it does say lochem, so what are they doing with that? And the answer is lochem dumya de'lochem. Like we said before, they agree. Of course it says lochem, but they're saying what kind of lochem is mutter? Only the kinds that are similar to la'ochla, to eating, as we said before, b'mishana osi, b'ure shoven, only things where the hana and the destruction of it happen at the same time, yotsu mishru kvusa, shana osan acha b'yoram, as opposed to mishra and kvusa, where the hana comes only after they're destroyed. Namely, Rashi says, when you soak flax in that wine, right away the wine becomes undrinkable. Meanwhile, what happens is it takes a few days until the flax gets soaked enough to get the fibers out of the stalk. So you don't have hana osir b'ur and shoving. First you have the beer, only later are you having the hana. Similarly, when it comes to laundering, you have, when you put the dirty clothing in there, then right away the wine becomes rude. It takes a few days, or it takes some time of it soaking in there for the beged to be usable. At what point you have the hanaf and the beged? That's a different point as well. There are different explanations. Whether it's at the time when the clothing is washed, or is it even only later when you wear the clothing? But whatever the case, the point is that meanwhile you have beer. And only later do you have hana. So what does this have to do with the machloikas of So Rashi says like this. The point so far is like this. The Chachamim hold that Peiros in general are meant to be eaten. Therefore, Kedushas Shvi'as applies to them, because we said Kedushas Shvi'as applies to anything with Hana Osir B'Orei Shavim. So therefore, the Chachamim would say, even let's say to begin with, you pick the grapes from which you're making this wine, and to begin with, you had in mind that you're going to use them for Mishra or for Kvosa. That wouldn't help. And nevertheless, they remain osir. Now, Rashi distinguishes, we learned yesterday about aleik kanim and aleik fanim. We learned about leaves of reeds like bamboo and other plants like that, or grape leaves. There it depends what you had in mind when you collected them, because they could equally well be used for one or the other. They could be used for eating. They can equally well be used, and it's common enough to use them for firewood or things like that. Peiros in general are meant to be eaten, and therefore, so the Chum say you can't use them for any other purpose. So now, when it comes to wood, so we would say regular wood is eitzim lahasaka nitnu. So now the Chachamim are going to say that includes even eitzim demashkan, even that oil wood or that firewood that we talked about before. The Chum would say it's included. Rabbi Yossi would say, we don't say stam peiros la'achila. He would say, just as with the leaves that we talked about before, you can have in mind a different purpose you're going to use them for, and that purpose makes the difference whether they have kedushas shvius or not. He says the same thing as far as the wine. So according to him, it all depend on the purpose for which you collected the wood. Did you collect it in order to use for firing up an oven, or did you collect it in order to use it as a torch or as firewood for a bonfire or whatever. So it comes out, in other words, the way Rashi is learning, that Rav Yossi is mekel in one area and machmir in another area. In the machloikas of him and the chachamim, it comes out. Rav Yossi is mekel as far as using peres shvius from mishra and kvusa, but on the other hand, based on the very same logic, he's machmir when it comes to, when it comes to eitz and the moshchan, whether kedusha shvius would apply to them. Now that's all according to Rashi. Then Rashi brings that there are other Lashonis, Rashi says, but this is the most proper one I found. Now you have this Gemara is also in Masechet Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah has a long sugya about Shavuos, and it brings in this whole point as well, this whole discussion about Eitzim the Moshchan and Kedushas Shavuos and all of Stam Eitzim, etc. There Rashi actually brings a different Gersa. Not Eitzim lehasaka, but Eitzim dehasaka, meaning wood itself that is regular wood that is used to fire up an oven. Where hanaosan achabiuran, then you would have a machlokas. Then the machlokas of Rav Yossi and the chachamim would be subject to that. Meaning, in other words, that you have the chachamim who say that you can't use peiros shvi from Mishro Kvusa, because they say that would be a problem, because you have Hana Osa Achabiyoroi. Well, then in that case, they would say, by the same token, firewood would also be the same issue, because with firewood as well, you have Hana Osa Achabiyoroi, and therefore you would say that you can't do that. So wood would have kedusha shvius, and in fact, Tosfos over here discusses, in that case, how can you use firewood at all? So how would you be able to use firewood in Eretz Yisrael? What about, inevitably, you're going to have some firewood of shvius in it as well, and Tosfos says, okay, it's bottle in the rest of the wood. Anyway, so Rashi continues to say over there, so then he brings the girsa that we have over here in the Gemara, Eitzim lahasoka tanoihi, with a lamed, and Rashi says, I worked very hard, he says, tarachti min urai, b'chot sidei shittas ashas, I worked ever since I was young to figure out with all possible ways in the Gemara to be able to fend for that girsa, and Rashi says, I can't. I found that girsa in a ksaviyad of Rabbeinu Gershom, and a ksaviyad of Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbi Nachem. And Rashi says, though, however, as much as Rabbeinu Gershom says this, the fact is that it's very hard to zetzain that girsa, eitzim lehasaka tanoihi, to say that it should mean that firewood, according to the Chachamim, should have kedusha shvius, and therefore Rashi says over there in Sukkah that no, that's not what the girsa is, it should be the eitzim dehasaka tanoihi. But here in Bava Kamma, Rashi is doing the other way around. Here he has the girsa, eitzim, here he does have the girsa, eitzim lehasaka, like we have in the Gemara in front of us over here, and he explains it's not a question of whether firewood is also a mutter. Everybody agrees that firewood is mutter. Fakir, the Chachamim are going to say not only is regular firewood, not only is regular wood that's used for firing up an oven mutter, but even eitz in the moshchon would be included, and there's no kedusha shvius on those. Whereas Rabbi Yossi would disagree on eitz in the moshchon, but not on regular wood. Then you have Marsha and Maram over there in Sukkah discuss this in great detail and discuss what exactly is the nature of the machlokas in the two places. Anyway, the point is. So Tosfos over here also brings this discussion as well. Tosfos says that in Sukkah, Rashi has Eitzim Dehasukkah, and here he has Eitzim Lahasukkah, and it comes out, according to that Gersa in Sukkah, it would come out, either Tosfos points out, yes, in principle, any firewood would should be also with Kedusha Shvius, however, it's bottled on the drive of wood from other years, or Tosfos says maybe you could distinguish between different kinds of wood. For example, in Masechta Sukkah over there, the context is it's talking about a lulav. Now, a lulav, normally what you do is, when you're not using it for the mitzvah, you use it for a broom. We looked a few days ago, we had a case where a person stole a lulav and tore off the leaves and made a broom out of them. So normally a lulav would be used for that. So now the question is, later on, are you allowed to then use it as firewood? That would be an example of hanaosei achabiyoroi. So according to the Chachamim, you wouldn't be allowed to, the same way as you're not allowed to take wine that you don't need anymore and use it for Mishra or Kvosa, whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, it would be Mutter. Other kinds of wood for sure wouldn't have Kedusha Shvias. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So we see from this machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim that they do argue as far as, wood, whether any kind of wood has Kedusha Shvias, and again, subject to the different geusos of here, you're going to have different possibilities of what kinds of wood they're arguing about. Okay, the Gemara continues with Rabbi Yossi Nami Haksiv LaOchla. Well, we're saying the Chachamim are saying you can't use wine for Mishro Kvusa to soak flax or to pre-soak clothes for washing, because it says LaOchla, and he said LaOchla implies it has to be Hana Oser B'Oran Shava. Well, Rabbi Yossi disagrees, because he said Lochem. So then, what is he doing with the word la'achla? The answer is, we use the word la'achla to teach us what it says in the following braisa. The Tanya, la'achla v'loyla melugma. When it says la'achla, means you cannot use peiros shvias for melugma, which is a type of, Rashi translates it as a plaster, like you put on a wound. You would put like a dressing on a wound, and you might well use some kind of crushed up fruit or food or something as part of that. So therefore you're not allowed to use peiros shvias for that. And he continues, and the braisa continues, ata oimer la'ochla v'loy l'malugma. Now you're saying it means to eat, but not for malugma. Maybe it means that you can't use it for laundry. No, the braisa says, and we're saying this braisa goes according to Rabbi Yossi, k'shu oimer lochem harei kvusa omer. No, because the word lochem includes kvusa, includes laundering, because that's something that people need all the time. Halmani, makayim, la'ochla. So what do I do with la'ochla? Means la'ochla v'loy l'malugma, means you can't use it for dressing on a wound. And the braisa continues, amara isa l'rabis ha'kvusa l'hoitzi es ha'malugma. So if we're saying that on the one hand, from the word la'ochla, we're being memayit something, and on the other hand, from the word lochem, we're being marva something, then Rabbi Yossi's, this braisa is saying, so why should we assume that we're including kvisa, that you're allowed to use the peiros shvias for laundering clothes, but not for malugma? Maybe say the other way around, you're allowed for malugma and not for washing clothes. So the answer is marva anyas hakvusa sheshova b'chaladim. The logic is, if we're going to have a ribui and we're going to have a miut, it's logical to be marva the laundering which is the same for everybody. Everybody needs their clothes washed. As opposed to a malugma, which is not necessary for everybody, because only sick or injured people need it. So therefore, if we're going to say that there's a ribui in the pasuk and a miut in the pasuk, it's more logical to say that that we're going to be memayit malugma and say on the other hand that we're going to be ma'ar b'kvusa. So now the chachamim are going to be memayit both of them. They're going to say that the lochem teaches us that you're only allowed to use the kind of hana which has hana also to be ordered shavim. Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold of that concept, but Rabbi Yossi uses the lochla to tell us to exclude malugma. And again, according to Rashi over here, it means Rabbi Yossi would make the distinction of what you picked or what you created the wine for in the first place, whether you had in mind that you're going to use it for a different purpose in the first place, and Rabbi Yossi would allow that if to begin with you planned to use it for kvusa, but even then he would say not for malugma, or according to Rashi and Shabbos, it would mean that Rabbi Yossi would be saying that in general it doesn't really matter your machshava, and Tosfos mentions that over here also, wouldn't really matter your machshava, it's just more a matter of that regardless, you're allowed to use them for kvusa, because that's considered lochem, but not for malugma, because that's not included in lochem, because not everybody needs it. Okay, the Gemara says, Keman Ozla Hodetanya, what about, according to which of these opinions does the following braisa go? A braisa says la'ochla v'loy l'malugma. You can eat peiros shvias, but you can't use them for malugma. La'ochla v'loy l'ziluf. The word la'ochla also comes to mean that you can't use it for sprinkling, for spraying around the house. In those times, we find sometimes in the Gemara that they would take wine and sprinkle it around the house to make a nice fragrance in the house. It would be sort of like air freshener nowadays. So you can't use it for that. La'ochla v'alasas mena apik tvizin. And also la'ochla means that you can't use peres shvius to make an apik tvizin, something that you would use in English. It's called an emetic, something that you would use to make somebody throw up. For example, somebody ate something poisonous and you need to get them to throw it up, or somebody overate and they're having stomach trouble, whatever. You have, say, an apik tvizin would be some kind of concoction that you give them to cause them to throw up, and you're not allowed to use peiros shvius for that. Rashi elsewhere explains the word apik tvizin actually comes from Rashi actually over there in Sukkah explains the word apik tvizin is short for a phrase in Aramaic apik tvizin, which means tvizin apik take out tvay the extra amount zin of food. So an apik tvizin is meant for something who's overeaten, and you give him this stuff to make him throw it up, so his stomach is not quite so overfull. Anyway, so Kaman could Rabbi Yosi. So according to who would that brisa go? Necessarily, it has to be according to Rabbi Yosi. The Ikarabonon, Haikarnami, Mishra Kvusa, because if it went according to the Chachamim, then it should have also mentioned Mishra and Kvusa. Now, as far as the Ziluf, Rashi points out, just like Malugma, we said, is not Shovel Chaladam, because only sick people need it. Similarly, Ziluf is only needed by fancy, finicky people. Regular people don't do that kind of thing. So therefore, so that would also be included in, so even Rabbi Yossi, who says that you can use Peiros Shvius for Mishra and Kvusa, because he points out everybody needs those things at one time or another, but he agrees that Melugma and Ziluf and Apik Tvizin, which are only needed once in a while, only occasionally by special people or whatever, then he would agree that those you can't use Peiros Shvius for. Okay. So the bottom line is that when we said before that Eitzim the Moshchan are not subject to Kedushas Shvius, it comes out that it would actually be subject to a Machlokas Tanoim whether they are or not. According to Rabbi Yossi, the way Rashi learns over here, yes. According to the Chachamim, no. And according to the way Rashi learns in Sukkah and the way that Tosfos brings over here, it would mean that according to the Chachamim, all firewood in principle would be osir with Kedushas Shvius, because not Hanan would be Urdin Shavah, but again, you have either that it's bottled in all the other wood, or that we're talking only about specific kinds of wood over here, such as ones that can be used for a different purpose first, for example, a lulav. Okay. Next, getting back to the Mishnah, we said Rabbi Yehuda Omer Imah Shvach Bola. We had the case where a person gave wool to a dyer, telling him to dye it red, and instead the dyer dyed it black, or the other way around. So we said Rabbi Meir Omer Noisim Leid Meit Samrei, that Rabbi Meir would say that the dyer is considered in effect a gazlan, so therefore he keeps the dyed wool and he pays the owner the value of the original wool, the raw wool, because kol gazlan and the shaman kashas exela, like we learned earlier in the masechta, and he was koneh like in earlier in the parak, and he's koneh at the shin. On the other hand, we said Rabbi Yehuda says he's not koneh. Instead, what it is he has to give it to the he has to give it to the person who gave him the job, and he has to and he gets paid either the yitzia or the shvach, whichever is less, as we talked about the other day, the expenses or the improvement in value, whichever one is less. And we talked about over there what Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi about a different definition of yitzia and shvach. So the Gemara brings in this connection, Simen Sabon, Samach Beis Nun is going to be a Simen for the Chachamim that are going to feature in the following little story. Samach standing for Yosef, the Beis for Abba, and the Nun for Hunna. So the Gemara says, Yosef Rab Yosef Achoyle de Rab Abba, Kamei de Rab Hunna. Rab Yosef was one time sitting behind Rab Abba in front of Rab Hunna. So Rab Hunna was the Rebbe. Rab Abba was one of the senior Talmidim, and Rab Yosef was one of the junior Talmidim, as we're going to find, as we find in various places in Shas, and we're going to have a story in this connection towards the end of the Masechta. The senior Talmidim, the higher level Talmidim, would sit towards the front, and then the junior level Talmidim would sit behind them. So here, Yosef Rab Huna v'kamar, halacha could have Yishuv ben Kercha, v'halacha could have Yehuda. Rav Huna was saying there are two cases, among others, I mean, these aren't the only ones, but there are cases where the Chachamim, where the halacha is like one tana, is like a das yachid against the Chachamim. They are, the halacha is like Rav Yishuv ben Kercha, which the Gemara is going to quote in a minute what opinion of Rav Yishuv ben Kercha we're talking about, and the halacha is like Rav Yehuda in our mission. Ahadrinu Rav Yosef Ha'ape, Rav Yosef turned around his face, meaning that he was upset. He's saying that I don't agree with what Rav Huna said. Omar, he says, Bishleimer Rav Yosef. Now, it's not that he has a problem with the fact that Rav Huna is saying that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, but he has a problem with why should Rav Huna have to say it in the first place, given that, as he's going to explain soon, necessarily the halacha has to be like Rav Yehuda for a different reason, and therefore there's no reason for Rav Huna to have to specify that one. Namely, Omar, he says, Bishleimer Rav Yosef ben Korcha Itzir. I understand why Rav Huna has to tell us the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Korcha, Sakra and Chamina, Yochid Rab, Malacha Kerabim. Because we have the usual rule, when you have one Tana against many other Tanoim, then the Halacha is like the Rabbim, and here Rabbi Shimon Korcha is a Das Yochid, Kamash Malan, Halacha Ki Yochid, and therefore he has to tell us that the Halacha is like the Yochid. So now the Gemara interjects. So now, when this was going on between Rav Huna and Rav Yosef, in the Beis Medrash, Rav Huna didn't necessarily have to specify what opinion of Rav Yosef ben Korcha we were talking about, because everybody in the yeshiva would have known. But now, for us who are learning in later generations, Ravina and Ravashi had to editorialize for us and tell us what opinion of Rav Yosef ben Korcha we're talking about. So Rav Yosef ben Korcha mayhi, the Tanya, Rav Yosef ben Korcha Omer, mil. Now, you have like this. At the beginning of Masech Da'avad Zara, the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss over there, there are limitations on doing business with Goyim a certain amount of time before their Chogas. Because you have the concern that if you do a good business deal with a Goy, and he benefits from it, he's going to be so happy about it that he's going to go and thank his Getchka on the day of his holiday, and you don't want to do that. So Titania, though, we learn in a, now the Mishnah over there at the beginning of Masech Da'avad Zara says that, among other things, you're not allowed to suppose that a goy owes you money within 3 days before their chogah. You're not allowed to collect the debt, say the Chachamim over there, because even though right now the goy may be upset that he had to part with that money, but he's going to be happy about it later on. The debt is off his head, and therefore he may go thank his getchka. So the chum say that, and the chumim say over there in the Mishnah, there's no difference whether it's a milva al peh or a milva b'shtar. There's no difference whether there's a document written out that this goy owes the money or not. Either way, the chum say you can't do it within 3 days of their chogah. But a braisa says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korchoimer, milva b'shtar ein nefroin mehen. He says, I agree that a milva b'shtar you can't collect from them. You have a shtar. And therefore, so first of all, you're going to be able to collect it later. But more to the point, Rashi says, is that because the goy is going to be more happy about it. He knows that you have a shtar. He knows it's on his. He knows it's over his head. The fact that he owes this money and he's not going to so easily be able to evade it. And therefore, now when he pays it off, he's happy and he may go thank his getchka. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, Milval pen, you throw in my hand. But if it was a verbal loan without a shtar, then you are allowed to collect from them within 3 days before the chogah. Because then it's considered like you're saving the money from them. Meaning, in other words, that without a shtar, the goy has the option of denying the debt altogether. So then when you're collecting it from him, there's no he's going to be happy that he's going to go thank his getchka because now he's out of this loan. Because anyway, he would have had the option to be able to deny it, and you, the Yid, don't have a shtar to be able to prove it. So Rabbi Yosef ben Korcha says you would be allowed to collect, and there is also a point, the Ran makes another point as well. Rashi explains that in Avodah Zarah, that it means that the Goy is not going to be happy about it, according to Rabbi Yosef ben Korcha, because like this, he would have had the option of denying it altogether, and like this, you're making him pay. On the other hand, the Ran there points out another point as well, which is, the fact is, you are saving it from them, in the sense that, after all, what if the Goy does deny it? Then there goes the loan, there goes Yiddish guilt, so therefore Rabbi Yosef ben Korcha is going to allow you to collect it from him, because matzel miyodim, because otherwise you may not have a chance to collect it later on. And so now Rav Huna is saying, halacha is like Rabbi Yosef ben Korcha, so therefore Rabbi Yosef says, I understand why Rav Huna had to say that, because otherwise we would think the halacha is like a chacham. Ela halacha could have Yehuda lomeli, but Rabbi Yosef says, why does Rav Huna have to bother saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? This is why he's turning around his face in annoyance, like to say, I don't agree that Rav Huna should have had to say that. Because anyway, machloikas va'achakach stamhi, isn't this a case where you have a machloikas in a Mishnah, and then later on, you have a stam Mishnah about that, and we have a rule, machloikas va'achakach stam alohakas stam. When we have like that, when we have a machloikas in a Mishnah, and later on we have a stam Mishnah on the same subject, according to one of the opinions, then it means the halacha is like that. Because it means, in other words, so Rebbe formulated the Mishnayos in that way. First he brought the machlokas, so we should be aware of those machlokas, and later on, it gives us a stam Mishnah to say in the end, the final decision is like that. So therefore, where do you have that? Where do you have the machlokas for achakach stam? So the Gemara explains, machlokas for Bava Kama. The machlokas is here in Masechta Bava Kama, in our Mishnah, where we have the tzboya loy odim v'tzavei shachar, shachar v'tzavei odim, that if you gave the wool to the dyer to dye red and he dyed it black, or the other way around, Rameyer omen noisim leid meit samre, we said Rameyer considers him a gazlan, and he just pays him the value of the wool and keeps the dyed wool for himself. Rav Yehuda Omer, im ashvach yotzer al itzia, noisim leis itzia, vim itzia, yisayr al ashvach, noisim leis ashvach. Whereas Rav Yehuda said you have to calculate the itzia, the expenses that the guy incurred, versus the shvach, the improvement, the value, to the value of the wool, and you pay him the lesser of the two of them. Or as Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi, at least according to one explanation of the Yerushalmi, it means you figure out what the shvach is, you expected that the result is, after everything, after all the expenses that you, the balabos, are putting into it, the wool, the dye, paying the dyer, you expected to make X amount of profit, so now you have to be guaranteed that amount of profit, and if that means deducting from the dyer's, from the dyer's pay, then so be it. So that's the machlokas in our masechta. The ustam above matzia. Then now you have the stam mishnah is in above matzia, which we'll get to in a few months. Beis Hashem. The tnan where the mishnah says kol hamishane yoda al tachtona, whoever changes has the lower hand, and the lower hand means exactly that. Like we're saying over here, shvach al yitzia, whichever is less. And the mishnah continues v'chol achoze bo yoda al tachtona. Anybody who reneges on a deal, when you have, for example, the context the Mishnah is talking about over there is a worker who quits in the middle of the job, he has the lower hand, where, in other words, you have to, as the Gemara discusses over there, as we'll learn when we get to it, Beis Hashem, you have cases where now the job has to be completed, and it's going to cost more to hire other workers, so then you deduct from his pay accordingly in order to pay for those other workers. The point being, another, and Kol HaMashana is referring the Pashtus to this kind of case involving where you gave the, where you told the dyer to dye the wool one color and he did it a different color and was saying Yodeh Latachtona, which is exactly what Rabbi Yehuda is saying in our Mishnah. So therefore you have a Machlokas V'Achakach Stam. So why does Rabbi Huna need to even tell us that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda if it should be obvious based on that? The truth is, Tosfos points out actually that the fact is that the Gemara there in Bava Metzia points out that there are actually two ways of understanding the kol achoze, well, so actually we'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so the point is kol mashana yodal atzona clearly refers to this case where he's mashana, where he does differently than what the guy told him. He told him to dye the wool one color and instead he did it a different color. So why should, given that, as the Gemara is going to continue explaining, Rabbi Yosef considers that all three Babas are considered one Masechta, well, before we get to that, actually. So, okay, so we have a Machloikas in Bava Kama and a Stam in Bava Metzia. So Rav Huna, so why does Rav Huna need to say the Halacha is like Rav Yehuda? He says, Itzrich, you still need to say it. Sakadat Hamina Ein Seder the Mishnah, because otherwise, you might think there's not necessarily an order in the Mishnah. Meaning, in other words, obviously, Tosfos says eventually Rebbe put together the Mishnah as we have it, and he put the Masechtas together in a certain order. We find sometimes at the beginning of a Masechta that the Gemara will discuss why does this Masechta come after that one. But when Rebbe first taught the Mishnayos, He didn't necessarily say them in the same Seder. We have them now, so therefore, so Ein Seder the Mishnah, therefore, Stam V'Achakach Machlokasi, so it could be the other way around. Maybe it's Raker. Maybe Bav Metzia comes first, and you have the Stam Mishnah and Bav Metzia, and then the Machlokas over here, and it would be the other way around. Then we would say, when you have a Stam and later on a Machlokas, then the Halacha is not like the Stam. So therefore, he needs to stress that, no, here the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Yosef, so what does Rav Yosef answer to that? He says, Yehochi komachalikas v'achakas stoma, neyme ein seder l'mishna, or stam v'achakas machalikasi. Obviously, you can't say that. Every time you have, we know that there are rules about stam v'achakas machalikas and machalikas v'achakas stam. If you said ein seder l'mishna, then it would mean that you never would be able to determine which is the stam and then machalikas and which is the machalikas and then the stam. The fact that we have those rules shows, says Rav Yosef, that there is a seder l'mishna. But Rav Huna would answer back, Kilay Amin ain't say to the Mishnah, b'chod Masechta. Within one Masechta, we don't say ain't say to the Mishnah. Within one Masechta, we do say the way that we have it in front of us in Mishnayos is the way that Rebbe originally taught it. But across two Masechtas, we don't know which Masechta Rebbe taught first and which one second. So conceivably, he could have taught Bava Metzia before Bava Kama. If it was all in the same Masechta, then Rav Huna says, sure, you wouldn't need to specify who the Halacha is like, because you could use the Stam V'Achakach Machlokas and Machlokas V'Achakach Stam rules. But these are different Masechtas. But Rav Yosef, what does Rav Yosef answer to that? Kulam Ezikin Chodem Masechti. He says all of Nizikin is considered one Masechta. Now you have different understandings among Rishonim. Do we mean when we say Kulam Nizikin, do we mean Reb Shira Goin learns, and a number of other Rishonim also learn, that it means specifically the three Babas? The three Babas are considered one long Masechta, and in fact the names, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, mean the first gate, the middle gate, and the last gate, meaning in other words that they're originally all gates, those sections of a larger Masechta. There are other places in Midrashim also that imply the same thing. There's a Midrash, for example, that mentions that Masechta Kalim has 30 Perakim, and Masechta Nezikin has 30 Perakim, and that means Masechta Nezikin would be the three Babas as we have them, each of which has 10 Perakim. There is, in fact, Tosefta of Masechta Kalim is divided exactly like that. Masechta Kalim itself, we have in front of us as one long Masechta of 30 Prokim, but the Tosefta on it is actually divided into also above Akam, above Matzia, and above Basra. So therefore, so there are a number of Rishonim, a number of Gaonim and Rishonim that say that, yet, that when we say over here, according to Rabbi Yosef, Kulam Azikin, Chodem Masechta means specifically the three Babas. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that it means that the entire Seder Nezikin, the Ritva holds that that it means that the entire Seder Nezikin is considered one long Masechta. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yosef is saying, therefore, Bava Kama and Bava Metzia are part of one Masechta, therefore you have the rule of Machlokas V'Achakach Stam, and you don't need to specify otherwise. So that would be a reason why Rav Yosef and Rav Huna are arguing whether you need to specify this or not. Rav Huna would not hold on that. He would say Bava Kama and Bava Metzia are two separate Masechtas, and therefore we need to specify who the Halacha is like, because we can't use the Machlokas V'Achakach Stam rule. Whereas Rav Yosef turned away his face in annoyance, because he holds it's all one Masechta, and therefore there should be no need to specify. That's one way of saying it. The Boris Emer, another way you could say why Rabbi Yosef insists that it has to be, the halacha must be like that Stam Mishnah in Bava Metzia, Mishum Tekatoni Lagabe Hirsa Psiksa, because the Mishnah mentions it in a group of halachas, of fixed halachas, meaning the Tana over there is saying it together with another halacha where he's not bringing a different opinion or anything. He's saying as a factual statement where he says, so the Tana is mentioning these two things together, implying that these two halachas are both things that, now the fact is, doesn't even belong in that Mishnah. The context of that Mishnah is talking about hired workers and Kol HaMashana, where you're hiring them for a day job or something, and Kol HaMashana, which is talking about over here, something where you have a contractor, you contracted with the guy to dye your wool or whatever, doesn't really belong over there, but the Mishnah puts it in to show that it's part of Halachas Pesukos. It's statements in halacha where the implication is that the halacha is like both of them. Now, Tosfos points out that actually the Kol HaChozev or Yadan Lachsotona is not so simple over there, that there are different opinions in the Gemara what the case of Kol HaChozev or Yadan Lachsotona means, whether it's referring to workers or whether it's referring to a different case involving buying and selling. But evidently the Gemara over here in the second answer holds, like the opinion over there in the Gemara, that it does in fact mean to include the case of the hired workers. And then Tosfos also add, you can also say the word halchsa p'siksa means, in other words, that they're not so much the context, but the fact is that when the Tana says kol achozev yadanatona b'chol mashana yadanatona, it sounds like the Tana is coming to establish a fixed halacha. This is how it is, and therefore that implies the halacha should be like that. So that's another reason why Rabbi Yosef holds, given that. And by comparing with our Mishnah, where we see it's a machlokas tanoim, obviously the halacha has to be like that, and why is Rav Huna having to specify that? So that would be why Rav Yosef disagreed with Rav Huna specifying it in the first place. Okay. Talking more about this case where you gave a person a job to do and he did it differently, where we said that you gave the dye or wool and he dyed it the wrong color. So turn it up on him. Hanosin mois l'shluchoi likach lechitin. Person gives a shliach money to buy wheat for him, and the deal is, Rashi explains, the deal is that what we're gonna do is, I'm putting up the money, but what we're gonna do is, because you're buying it from me, whatever profit we make on selling that wheat, we're gonna split between us. And any loss will also be split between us. The lokach man sa'odim, instead the shliach went and bought barley with it. Or the other way around, sa'odim, the lokach man chitim, he was supposed to buy barley and instead he bought wheat. So we have two different braises that say what the din is. Tanya choda in pochsu loy vim esiro loy. One braise says that if the value of the wheat or the barley goes up or down, either way, then it's on the shliach. So if the expectation was that they were going to be able to sell the wheat, So he bought the wheat, let's say, for $10 a bushel. If the price goes down and now it's worth only $8 a bushel, then the shliach has to eat that cost. And if it goes up and now it's worth $12 a bushel, then the first braisa says that he will be able to keep that extra amount. The Tony Choda, on the other hand, another braisa says in Poxu Loi, if it goes down in value, then it's on him and he has to absorb that cost. But that if it increases in value, then they split the increase in value between them like the original deal. And in that case, since now there's a profit of $2 per bushel, then it means that each of them is getting a dollar out of it. So how do we reconcile those two braises? Like Kasha Hora Meir Vahora Bihoda. It depends. That would be subject to the machlokas of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah. Hora Meir de Omar Shinui Koine. The one braisa, the first braisa that says that everything belongs to the shliach in that case where he changed what he was supposed to do is according to Rav Meir, where he says that a shinui makes a difference. So just like he said in the Mishnah, that he changed, he didn't follow his instructions and he dyed the wrong color and therefore he's koneh b'shinui and all he owes the owner is the original value of the wool. So the same thing over here. When he didn't do what the mashaleach had told him and he bought the wrong thing, then he gets to keep the profits. Now, here we're using the word shinui, by the way, in a little bit of a different sense than we've used throughout the parak so far. We've always been using the word shinui to mean an actual change to the object. For example, dyeing wool or making wood into furniture, etc. Here we mean shinui in the sense of doing something differently than what he was told. So that would be according to that name. Vahara Yehuda, and where's the second? Right, so we are going to be order. The Amar Shinui, any kona, he says that a shinui is not enough to be kona for him. Now, when it comes to the loss, then Tosfos points out, when it comes to the loss, the Mishaleach can tell him, look, you shouldn't have done differently than what I told you, so that's on you. But you were pashaya, and therefore you have to suffer the loss. But when there's a gain, then the fact is it was the Mishaleach's money, and therefore they should split it. We wouldn't say that the Mishana is considered a gazvan, and therefore they should have to split the profits. So that's how Rabbi Yochanan learns it. But Maskiflo Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Ozer asks on that, Mimai, who says that that's the same kind of thing as Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda would argue about? Doma ad kam ka'omer Rav Meir ela b'midi d'chozi le'legufei. Maybe the mayor is only talking about something where the balabais himself can use. For example, clothing. He's gonna use the wool to make himself clothing. And then he wants it dafka a certain color and not a certain other color. Aval l'schoira, but here he was only giving him the money to buy something for merchandise. Loy omar. Maybe the mayor would not say in that case, because he would say, you know what, the fact is, if there's a profit, what do I care, ultimately, whether I made my profit in wheat or in barley? Either way, we can't say that, why should we say that if there's a profit, the shliach gets to keep it for himself? Why can't the mashalayach say, in that case, you know what, I don't really care, the fact is, it's one thing for clothing for myself to wear, I doubt the one in a particular color, and if you did it a different color, then I don't want it. But here, there's no reason we should say, necessarily, that he would say, just because you bought barley instead of wheat, why should I not want the profit? And therefore, the mayor may well say that he should be entitled to his share of the profits. So then it would come out that the first braisa is not going to go according to either the mayor or Rabbi Yehuda. Ella Amar Rabbi Elazar, Hava Harab Mayor. Rather, Rabbi Elazar says both braisas are according to the mayor. But like Kasha Kama Achila Kama Schora, there's no contradiction because one is talking about where he sent him to buy grain to eat. And the other one is where he's sending him to buy grain for business, for buying and selling. So where he wants to eat it, then yeah, just like he'd be machped on his clothing, he'd be machped on his food. He doesn't want barley for his food when he wanted wheat, or the other way around. So therefore, you could say that then when the shliach buys it, then any profits that come from that he can keep for himself, as opposed to when he bought it for schora, then as we said, that he can say that when there's a profit, then I should be entitled to the profit, and when there's a loss, then fine, he can tell him, as the expression is, fakuni shtarticha v'loyla absi, I sent you to do good for me, not to mess up for me, and now you messed up, now the price went down, so therefore you have to eat that cost. However, the Gemara says, So therefore, Rabbi Elazar is explaining that's the machlokas between the braisas. So it's not really a machlokas; it's two different cases. And the Gemara points out, as far as Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, machaku alav ma'arava, they laughed at it in Eretz Yisrael, which the Gemara elsewhere mentions that when it says machaku alav ma'arava, as Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. So they laughed about this answer in Eretz Yisrael. They said, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, that the second braisa is saying that even though he didn't do what the balabas tells him, nevertheless, the owner of the one who gave him the money still a zoicha in the wheat. Why? Why? Did anybody inform the one who's selling the wheat that the shliach Shimon is coming to buy them on behalf of the mashaleach Ruvain, that we should say hosiru la'emza, that now the profit should be split according to both of them? How is the seller being validly machnet to him? How does he know that it's Ruvain who came to buy that wheat? Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains, Rabbi Elazar's opinion, there's no problem with, because Rabbi Meir would say that, he's saying that Rabbi Meir is saying as long as there's a profit to be made, then I don't care the fact that you did differently than I said, at least there's a profit out of it. So therefore you can say, the shliach is acting on behalf of the balabas, and therefore each one gets their half of the schar. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, was saying that it means that there's no shlichus over here, in effect. According to Rabbi Yehuda, when he's Mishana, it's not considered a shlichus. Nevertheless, he's not Koina. Well, why not then? The seller sold him the wheat, figuring that he's the one who wants to buy it. So in what way is the Baal HaMos ever acquiring the wheat such that he should be entitled to half the profits? How can we understand Rabbi Yehuda according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding? The fact is, there doesn't seem to be a way. After all, you're not coining a talisman with money. You're coining it with Mashicha or something like that, or the seller has in mind to be machnet to you. And here, the seller doesn't know that you're even involved because the shliach came with the money, and he didn't say necessarily that he's coming on behalf of a mashalayach. Tosfos actually discusses over here what are the Bnei Ma'arava holding? Are they saying therefore it means there's no sale here at all, or are they saying that the shliach himself are they saying that there is a kinyan and the shliach would be the one who acquires it himself, and therefore he gets any profits and losses, and he just has to reimburse the mishaleach for his money rather than saying that they split the profits between them. So Tosfos discusses that point and some other related points. Anyway, so therefore, the Bnei Ma'arava, the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, laughed at, and they couldn't accept this understanding of Rabbi Yochanan's. And the Gemara continues, Maskefer of Shmuel Bar Susauti. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Susauti asks on this Machakwa Lab Ma'arava, this that the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael are laughing at Rabbi Yochanan and disagreeing with him. Why are they doing that? Ihochi. If so, if that's the problem, then you would have the same problem even if he did buy wheat like he was supposed to. So if the seller doesn't know that the shliach is coming on behalf of the mishaleach, even if the mishaleach told the shliach to buy wheat and he did in fact fulfill his shlichus and buy wheat, then we would also say that the seller doesn't know that he's selling it to the mishaleach and therefore that he should be machneh to him. So if you're going to ask on that, then never mind where the shliach did something different than he was supposed to. Even if he did the exact same thing, you would have the same thing. You would have the same issue. So Tosfos discusses that necessarily we have to be talking about in these cases where the shliach did tell the seller that I'm buying it on behalf of the mishaleach. Well, then in that case, in the case of wheat and barley also, he sells it to him having in mind the mishaleach. So one way or the other, we're being inconsistent. So Rabbi Bohu answers, Amar Rabbi Bohu, Shainis chitin v'chitin d'shlechusi ka'ovid v'chi bala bayis domi. The difference is, when he sent him to buy wheat, and he actually bought wheat, he is accomplishing his shlechus. Therefore, he can be considered like the bala bas, because shlechus sholadim kamoisim. But when he bought barley, then we're saying, the fact is, he's not a shliach anymore, because he's changing his shlechus, and therefore, the seller would have to know that he's actually selling to him, and he would have to know that he's selling to the mishaleach, and he doesn't, because mihoidiyo, as they said, and therefore the result is that the Bnei Ma'arav are asking, so in that case, how is the Mishaleach being koine in the first place? And Rabbi Bohu continues, Teda. In fact, we can prove that. We can show that that's so, that there is a distinction between whether the Shliach is accomplishing his Shlichus or not. That if the shliach is doing exactly what he was told, then automatically the mishaleach is kona whatever it is that he bought, and we don't say that the seller has to know that. Because we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, echad amakdish nechosav, when a person is makdish all of his possessions, or the echad amarechas atzmoi, or a person declared that he's going to give his erech to the Beis Mikdash, and he owes hekdash a certain amount of money. And now, let's say he can't pay it. So in the case of Makdish Nechosav, he was Makdish all his property, and now the treasurer of the Vesmikdash has to come collect it all to take the Hekdash. In the case of Erchim, we're talking about that he declared that I'm going to pledge a certain Erech to the Vesmikdash, and now he doesn't have enough money to pay. So the Mishnah says, Eimloy B'ksus Ishtoi, when the Gizbar comes to collect things in order to pay off the debt, he cannot collect from the guy's wife's clothing, v'loibitzus banav, or his children's clothing, v'loibitzevashetzavalishman, not even when you have clothing that he died on their behalf. Meaning, in other words, if he gave a dyer clothing to dye on behalf of that his wife or children will wear that clothing, then the gizbar cannot collect from that. Or new sandals that he bought for his wife or children. So the gizbar cannot take any of those. Now, Sir Rabbi Bohu says, "Vamai." Now you have to ask, why not? Lema hochanami. Lema hochanami. Mihodiel of saba sheyuknet sheyaknet sivoy leisha. In the case of the dyer, who's telling the dyer that when he's dyeing this clothes, it should be for the noydir's wife or children? So, and yet we see that the very fact that he gave it to the dyer for their purpose takes it out, makes it immune to the gizmo collectively. So you see, therefore, that just because the dyer doesn't know one way or the other, ela lav mishum gamin the shlichus ekavin. Obviously, the answer is because he's doing a shlichus. His wife wanted a dress dyed a certain color, and he's going to the dyer and having him dye it that color. So he's doing a shlichus ukiyad ishter dami. So he's considered like his wife's hand, and therefore he is. And therefore, we say it is niknet to her. And therefore, the gizmo can't take it. Hochanami, well, then the same thing. Rabbi Bohu says the same thing over here. You have the same point. The same way over here. When he's buying wheat, when he was told to buy wheat, and he does in fact buy wheat, then he's like the yad of the balabas, but otherwise not. So therefore, so Rabbi Bohu says to answer Rabbi Shmuel Bar Susauti's question, yes, there is a big difference whether a person is doing his proper shlichus and is considered like the balabas himself versus where he alters his shlichus and then does not. Now Tosfos points out, we did learn the other day, we had the discussion about yesh shvach samon and agave atzemer or not. When wool has been dyed, do we consider that wool, that dye still exists or not? So Tosfos points out, what do you mean that the dyer would have to be machne, the dye to the woman? The dye no longer exists, even for hektish to be chal on it. So Tosfos says, fine, it's true. If you say that, then tachli, you wouldn't need him to be machne thing, but say anything, but still, she is having hana from his Maisi Yodav, and she would have to pay him. And therefore, instead of being paid by her, the husband is paying him. So instead, we're saying that money that the husband would have to pay for dyeing that garment is immune to hektish taking because it belongs to her, basically, and not to him. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss, based on the earlier Tosfos, that again, what we're saying is, if you don't tack it either way, the seller does have to be informed. Tosfos had learned earlier that the seller does have to be informed that he is selling to the Meshaleach in order for this whole thing to work. So the same way over here, then yes, the dyer would have to be, we're talking about the money that the dyer received, that we're asking it should be hektish, and the answer is that we're saying that not. The dye itself, it's true, would not necessarily be subject to hektish, unless maybe we said that we'd have to return that dye to, that he'd have to return the dye, and then he'd have to give back the garment, and reimburse, or whatever. He'd have to keep the garment and be reimbursed or whatever. So therefore, Tosfos discusses that whole point of how this fits with Shvach Samon and Agave Atzem. So, the point is, Rav Abahu is saying that there is a difference whether a shliach is doing what he's supposed to do or not. However, Amar Rav Abba, but Rav Abba says that's not really a proof. Loi, kol makdish nechasim, ein daita, oksus ishti avanim. You could say, to begin with, when a person is makdish his nechasim, he doesn't have in mind to include his wife's or children's clothing. So therefore, it's not a matter of that he bought them, and then we have to talk about whether they belong to him or whether they belong to her, or he paid the dyer, and we don't know yet whether that clothing belongs to him or her. We could say, to begin with, he has no intention of being makdish anything that includes anything that's not his directly, anything that's wife or kids. Master for Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira says on that, well, wait a minute. When a person is makdish as a chosim, does he have in mind to give away his tefillin to hekdish? The pashtus not, the utnan, and yet that Mishnah says they are in erchin, makdish as a chosim, malin like tefillin. That yes, if a person is makdish as property, we do figure out the value of his tefillin, and he has to pay, if he wants to keep his tefillin, he's going to have to pay hekdish that amount, otherwise they take away his tefillin. So we see, even though he doesn't mean to be makdish them, nevertheless it would be included. So this should be the same thing over here. So how can you, Rav Abba, say that there should be a difference whether he has in mind to begin with to be makdish his wife and children's clothing? It shouldn't make a difference, and therefore we should go back to that it's a question of whether he's a shliach on their behalf or not, like Rav Abba was saying. Amalei Abaya, so Abaya answers, ain't. As a matter of fact, yes, Daita shall Odomal Tefillah. Yes, you can say a person does in fact have in mind to include his tefillin in his hektish, because Amalei Abaya, ain't Daita shall Odomal Tefillah. Usually it's true when a person, so Abaya says, ain't, yes, Daita shall Odomal Tefillah. Yes, a person does have in mind the tefillin. Hamakdish nechasa, because when he's makdish nechasa in Sabar, he thinks mitzvah ka'abidna. After all, I'm doing a mitzvah to be makdish things, and therefore he figures that even if he includes his tefillin, that's also part of the mitzvah. On the other hand, Abaye says the ain daitish of Adam, on the other hand, he does not have in mind his wife's or his children's clothing, Mishum Eva, because he doesn't want that there should be bad feelings between them. It's going to cause a lot of friction in the household if they find out that he's makdish their clothing. So therefore, yes, we can assume that there's a difference between one and the other. So yes, that would leave us. In other words, we could say that yes, a person does have in mind to be makdish his tefillin, but he doesn't have in mind to be makdish ksus ishti uvanav, and therefore that would fit with Rav Abba's answer that it's not a question of whether he's a shliach or not. To begin with, he has no intention of including their clothing in his akdasha. But maski for Rav Oshia, so Rav Oshia says, oh, I have another problem with Rav Abba's opinion. After all, we're talking about over here. We mentioned two cases where he's makdish and when he's marich, where he declares an erech, and utnan, and the Mishnah there in erechin says chayova erechin, the mashkin noisan, people who are chayiv an erech, then the gizbo goes and takes a mashkin from them. You could ask when a person makes a neder to hektish, does he have in mind to begin with that they should take a mashkin from him ba'al korchoi? Obviously not, and yet the gizbo can. So the same way, in other words, just because he doesn't have in mind to include his wife's and children's clothing because of Eva, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be included. Therefore, it would only be, therefore, the only way we could say that the reason why he doesn't get the wife's or children's clothing is because they already own them. And why do they already own them if they haven't actually started wearing them yet? Because he bought them or arranged with the dyer to make them on her behalf, and therefore that's already considered that he did it as the shlichus, which fits with what Rabbi Bahu says, that if he's doing his proper shlichus, then he is considered the yad of the mashalayach, and otherwise not. So that would be like Rabbi Bahu's answer, and not like Rabbi Shmuel Bar Susauti's question, that there shouldn't be a difference one way or the other, that Rabbi Shmuel Bar Susauti was saying that the seller should have to know who he's selling to, not necessarily. So Ella Amar Rav Abba, so Rav Abba corrects his explanation. Rav Abba says, "Kol makdish nechasav nasa kamisha hikna lehem ksus ishtir one of meikra." When a person is makdish his nechasim, we consider as though to begin with he was makna the clothing to his wife and children before he's makdish his nechasim. So even we're not talking the Mishnah is saying they hadn't started wearing them yet. And we're talking about that he only bought the shoes for them or he arranged with the dyer to dye them. The question was that the question was in that case that then shouldn't we say he didn't mean to include them? So that's the thing. So Rabbi Bohu was saying that he didn't mean to include them in the first place, and therefore they're not included. On the other hand, Rabbi Oshia is saying the fact is by Chayva Erchin, it shouldn't matter whether he means to include something or not. So Rabbi Abba is saying you're right. What it means is not that he's acting as their shliach. But rather that it, and not whether he has in mind or not, he was already makna to them in the first place before he ever declared the hektish or the erech, and therefore now again the gizbo can't collect from them. So nothing to do with shlichus or not. He's actually they belong to him until right before he declares the hektish or the erech, and then at that point they belong to the wife or to the children. And then at the time he says the erech or the hektish, they don't belong to him anymore. They belong to them, and therefore the gizbo can't take them. So that being the case, then there's no proof one way or the other from that din as far as shlichus, whether we should say that when it comes to a shliach acting on behalf of the mashaleach or doing differently than what the mashaleach told him, whether the mashaleach should be koiner or not, then we don't really have a proof one way or the other from that. So now you actually have Now, so it comes out, in other words, one point that comes out of this discussion then is taka. When you have a shliach goes to, on behalf of a shaleach to buy something, does the seller need to know that he's selling to the mashaleach in order for the mashaleach to be koneh, or does it not matter because, like we're saying, the shliach is like the mashaleach? You have different opinions in the Gemara over here. So here you first have the Rif and the Rosh, Paskin like Rabbi Yechanan, and say that it doesn't matter whether the seller knows at all. But then the Rosh points out, based on this whole sugya over here, usually you have a rule when the Gemara discusses something at length, then it means that is what's a liba de hilchasa. And since according to Rabbi Yechanan, all you need is that the husband meant for the clothing to be given to the wife, and therefore it's hers, and you don't need this whole thing of that he intended to begin with that it should belong to her right before he declares an erech and so forth. And then there's a good deal of discussion about that. The Rosh points out, after all, it's different over here. He used his own money in the case of the shliach. He's using the mashaleach's money. And then the Hagois Oshri, which is notes on the Rosh, from later poskim, point out that no, this would be one of those cases where, even though the Gemara is giving this whole long discussion, it's not a liber de hilchasa, the halacha would be it doesn't really matter whether the seller knows or not who it's going for. And you have a lot of discussion further about that among Rishonim and among Achronim, what exactly would be the halacha over here. So in the end, the halacha is Paskin. The Rambam brings that if the shliach buys barley instead of wheat, then either way the mshaleach is buying. Either way the mshaleach owns it. And then again, like we said before, in pochsu loy, if it goes down in value, then it's on the shliach. But there's also the difference, as the Gemara had said over here, between achila and schoda, whether he bought it in order to eat it or in order to sell it. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings like the Rambam, and the Machaber brings like the Rambam, and the Ramah brings like the Rosh. So it's going to be a nafkamina in what cases is the Meshaleach acquiring what was sold, and in what cases not, is going to depend on this Machalokas of the Rambam and the Rosh, which in turn is based on the different ways of understanding and applying what we said over here in this sugya. You do have, by the way, an interesting thing in that connection. Another interesting din related to that is sometimes you can have, say, for example, two people give one person money to buy something on their behalf, and he goes and buys it with only one person's money and buys it. So then we say it belongs only to the one who gave him the money. On the other hand, if he pulled the money together and bought half with one and half with the others, then it's going to belong half to one and half to the other. And for the contemporary post-skim talk about what about nowadays, that money, you don't usually pay for things in cash anyway. How you usually pay for things with bank transfers and things like that, then you don't really necessarily have a distinction between one person's money and another. And then in either case, when Meshaleach buys it, he would have to be buying it on behalf of both of them. And there's different permutations within that halacha.